Hello and welcome to Pumped, the Inside Podcast by Schwalbe. I'm the host Tobias Wogon, and normally I'm hosting here every Tuesday an episode of the Schwalbe Pump Podcast. But this week we have a special episode because we have a guest host. Our friend Ben Delaney, who just competed at the Unbound Gravel Race in Kansas, took the time after the race and interviewed some of our Schwalbe athletes about their race and the new tire. So have fun with this special episode, and we hear us back next week in the normal episode of Pumped.
Unbound gravel is many things to many people, but it is always a challenge to anyone who takes on any of the distances on tap in Emporia, Kansas. I'm Ben Delaney. I'm your guest host on this special edition of Pumped. And we are today talking to a number of people who did very well at Unbound Gravel this year, including winner of the 200, Ivar Slick, winner of the 350-mile XL, Cynthia Frazier, and then the sports scientist and great bike racer in his own right, Lucas Luhr. I did the 100 this year, which in any other event is a plenty long distance, but at Unbound is the baby distance. It's the short distance. I managed to pull off a third on Schwalbe's new G1 RS tires. Was very happy with that, and only got away with about an hour or two racing in the mud and the rain. But now let's go to speak with the other athletes who did far better in the far greater distances, and we'll start with Ivar, who is now back home in the Netherlands. And now I'm happy to welcome to the Pumped Podcast Ivar Slick, winner of the 2022 Unbound Gravel 200. Ivar, great to see you, sir. How are you today?
Thank you. Yeah, I'm fine. Back in the Netherlands, and a lot happened after my win in Unbound. I got a lot of media attention, so yeah, it's cool to see.
Absolutely. I mean, as you know, many people have been talking about, Unbound Gravel is the biggest race in America, hands down. Road cycling, yes. Mountain biking, gravel cycling, that is the big one, and you came in and you crushed it, so congratulations on that. We definitely want to hear all about it. I want to hear like three types of things about, you know, just, you know, your overall experience at the race, for sure, but I also want to, you know, hear about your preparation for the race, like what your thoughts were coming into it, and then now how what you're doing for recovery. So let's. I want to start with your expectations. You know, like what did you know about the course? What did you think about the course coming in, and what were you expecting, like in terms of, you know, like the power output, and you know, how did you get your bike and body ready for Unbound? That's a whole bunch of questions there, but like, what were you thinking coming into the race, I guess, is the main question.
Yeah, in 2021, I did Unbound for the first time, and I wasn't well prepared. And the lessons I learned from that race, I took with me to this year's race. And I made a few mistakes with nutrition strategy, and I went too fast in the beginning. So I couldn't slow down myself, and was going full in the first part of the race. I was in the leading group of seven, but then I took too much carbs with me, and my body couldn't absorb it anymore, and so I got stomach problems, and I was dropped. And it was a hell of a race to reach the finish line. And after that, I thought I'd never come back to Unbound again because it was so hard. But I also had a different kind of setup. I am a beach racer from original.
Yes.
And I had a beach bike. And with gravel, with the race handlebars. So, but that was... I was running 57 wide tires, millimeters, the G1 all round.
Wow, last year. The beach tires.
Tires. Yeah. On the tricky parts, it was good, but on the fast parts, it was slow.
Yes.
And Yeah, but after all, I became 14, so it was not bad. And at the end of 2021, Trestina came to me if I would like to write the full gravel calendar for them. And so I started a one-man team, and Schwab came to me as a tire partner. And with them, they supported me with the best tires, and I got the prototype, the Schwalbe G1 race speed.
Yes.
And I raced it. My first race was the 1st of May in Girona, Traca Gravel.
Which you won.
And I immediately won. So that was a perfect start of the season. And I felt already really comfortable on the bike and with the tires. And so that was... Yeah, great start.
And instead of 57 millimeter tires, those were 40 millimeter tires, right?
Yeah.
So enough. There's some cushion, but still relatively lightweight and fast.
Yeah, right? It was a lot faster. And then we started our American campaign together with Jasper Okkerloen. First race was Gravel Locos, 14th of May. And we traveled together for 4 weeks. And in Gravel Locos, we became 1 and 2,
yes.
So that was a perfect start. Jasper won that race, and he's also riding with Schwalbe. So we were really happy, and got more and more confident in the tires because of Unbound is well known of his tire shredding rock. So a lot of riders they get mechanicals, especially punctured. So you are always afraid to get the puncture during the race, but before Unbound, the Wednesday before Unbound, we did a ride with Schwalbe and got the new fresh tires, which are even more puncture resistant, and made them tubeless with the dog blue sealant and stand sealant. So that combination went well for me during the race because I had no mechanicals, and so that was really nice.
Yeah, that's exceptional. I mean, as you mentioned, people are, I don't want to say scared of Unbound, but most racers go into that race expecting at least something to go wrong. It's not a matter of like whether it will go wrong. It's like what will go wrong
and
how often.
Yeah.
Whether that's, flat tires or
exactly.
Or mud clogging. Like, Paul Voss was there on speed play pedals and he had to sit down for 5 minutes to get the mud out of his pedals. And, there's
the
always
muddy sections.
Yeah. Oh, I just wanted to ask about your nutrition. You said last year you had too many carbs in your drink. So what did you do for nutrition this year? What were in your bottles, and what were you eating?
Last year I was doing a lot with only drinking. So on 90 grams of carbs an hour, but only from bottles. So this year, I combined it with bars, gels, and beta fuel and isotonic drink mix.
And that seemed to work out
that
fine.
That was a lot better.
Yeah. Now, tell us about, I'm jumping around a little bit, but at Unbound Gravel 200, there are two checkpoints. These are the only places where racers can take on additional supplies. There's two neutral water feeds where the race provides water for whoever, but if you want to take on more bottles or anything special for you, there's two places where you can do that. So what did you put in those checkpoints, and how did that execution go? Tell us about going through the checkpoints.
Yeah,
what did you do?
Last year we were at Airbnb with and the Airbnb host, we had a support crew, so our Airbnb host was our support guy, but he had no experience and was a little bit old, 67 years.
Yes.
So it was a little bit tricky, and but this year we made it it was a lot better organized with the support of Schwalbe, and you get a pass, we got the red zone, and then the Schwalbe stand with the blue flags, so you can ride to that and grab your bottles from the cool box, and get a new camelback on, fresh camelback on. And yeah, it was very nervous in the checkpoints because everyone want to go as fast as they can back on the bike. And normally at the other races like Gravel Locos and Traca, they waited on everybody who was in the group.
Yes.
And wrote, but now it was one for all. And so it was really, really a race. But yeah, the pit stops for me went well. So that was also something where I was happy about.
How many people were together, just roughly, like how big was the group coming into the first checkpoint and then into the second checkpoint, just approximately?
Yeah, in the first checkpoint, there were three riders in front, Laurens ten Dam, Paul Vos and Mattia De Marchi. And I was in the second group of about 20 riders, 15 to 20 riders.
Yes.
Because the pace in the first 3 hours was already quite high. And it was for me, it was perfect because I wanted to do easy in the first 3-4 hours. And
you weren't going easy, just for the record. That was maybe easy for you, but you guys were flying.
Yeah, but I was trying to save as much as energy as possible. Yes. Because the year before, that was one of my mistakes. So, yeah, I had super legs. I told also to Sebastian that I had super legs that day. And but I had to keep myself calm. And then three riders attacked, and they had a gap of 3 minutes. So the guys in my group, they started to panic. And they wanted to, we turned with 15 riders. So, yeah, that was a high pace. And it wasn't that hard to ride with 15 riders because, everyone do their turns. So with 15 riders, we went to the first checkpoint. And then, everyone did it as fast as possible, change the bottles, get new gels and bars and camelbacks. And then, maybe one or two riders were too slow and yes, got dropped. And after that, we chased again. And after 200K, first Paul Vos came back and then Mattia De Marchi. So Laurens dropped them both because he felt super strong that day.
Yes.
And our group of 15 was also getting smaller and smaller because of, the hard parts and also some punctures. And then we became after 220K at Texaco Hill.
Yes.
And it began to rain heavily and we saw Laurens riding, so that gave us a moral boost.
Yes.
And that moment I went full gas and I felt strong, like I said, and five riders could follow, and we went up and over Laurens.
Yes.
So it was a hard section with many climbs and tricky descents, and all mud everywhere, and it was we were turning into mudmen.
Yeah. So. Yeah. So when you're racing in the rain in the mud like that, is it better to be at the front where you can see a little bit better, or do you still try to want to be in the wheels so you can be conserving some energy? How do you balance those two things of wanting to see where you're going versus not being in the wind?
It was that section. It was just one for each other. So
every man for himself, we would say.
Every man for himself. Yes. You didn't have drag from each other. So it was really tough conditions. And Keegan Svensson, who won the Sea Otter Classic, he is a good mountain biker. So he went very fast through the muddy sections. And Alex Heijvermeulen is also a mountain biker who was in the front group.
Yes.
And at one muddy section, I made a mistake. And I was also riding with road pedals. So
yes, I saw that. Your look pedals.
So that was a disadvantage on that part. But then I had to close a gap of 20 seconds on the four riders. But that went quite well. And From then I thought, yeah, I have super legs. And I started to believe in that I could really win this race, especially after Pete Stettina was dropped.
Yes.
He bunked. I think he had no energy left in his body.
Yes.
And that the second checkpoint, it was only 60K before the finish. That was also very fast because, Ian Boswell, he did a very fast pit stop and attacked immediately. So then I had to close a gap too.
Uh-huh.
And we were at three with Keegan Svensson. With three. And then Alexander Vermeulen could also close the gap again. So we were at four in the front. And the last 50K were quite easy. Yeah, everyone was tired and we're waiting on the perfect moment to attack. But yeah, it was also difficult because we had to pass the 100 milers.
Yes.
On the same route.
Yes.
And then 15K before the finish, Lawrence Ten Dam came out of nowhere. Uh-huh. So we were, where you come from? But we were not riding that hard. So yeah, we were at five again. And at he did an attack, but he said immediately to me, yeah, I'm so fucked.
Yeah.
I'm completely dead. And so he said already he can't do so much anymore. But yeah, Ian Boswell made a strong impression on me. And from Keegan, I didn't know how fast he is in the sprint.
Yes.
So
it was largely flat. Like the last 20, 30 kilometers were pretty flat, right?
Yeah.
So there's really nowhere to attack unless you're feeling really good. And then you come back into town. You're going through the college campus, and there's that one short hill, but pretty steep.
Yes.
And that's where Alexi Vermeulen came off, correct?
Yeah, he was dropped there. And
did anyone try to attack, or was everyone just riding pace? And what happened on that hill?
Ian tried to attack, and Keegan jumped directly on his wheel, and me too on Keegan's wheel. And Lawrence had also to let a little gap. But at that moment, I thought already, I have good legs still.
You've got this.
Still something in the tank. So, and then Lawrence attacked the last K, but he has not the explosivity.
Yes.
And then we came in the commercial street, the main street, the finish street. So that was, you saw the finish line, and I started to focus on the sprint. And Ian went quietly, so Keegan Svensson went over him, but that was also a little bit too early, so
yes.
For me it was perfect.
Yes.
And I could,
you had a lead out.
Yeah, I had a good lead out, and I could cross the finish line in first place, and it was an amazing feeling. I was so happy. I was so happy with that, but also... Yeah, completely tired also because of the sprint and the long distance.
Yes.
I really had to hang over my bike. So many press came with me. It was overwhelming by media attention. It
yes.
was something I never experienced before.
Yes, you got swarmed. We all had to run down past the finishing chute to catch up with you there. And your bike, your body was still trembling from the effort of nearly 10 hours going hard. I know you said you were going easy in parts, but even when you're going easy on that surface, it still takes its toll on the body. So that was an incredible ride. Congratulations again on that.
Yeah, and also it makes even more cool that I'm the first non-American winner and in the fastest time ever. So. I'm
yes.
really proud of it. And also in the Netherlands, I got a lot of media attention. So invitations for talk shows and podcasts and radio shows. So
great.
It's really cool to to experience.
Great. Well deserved. Congratulations on that. Enjoy it. Now, what would you, the one question that's always funny to ask people as soon as they come across the finish line is, hey, would you do this again? And usually people, even people who place pretty well, will say, no, that was a horrible experience. I don't want to do it again. Obviously, you're smiling. You're eager to come back and probably win again. If you do come back, what would you change about your bike setup? You know, I was surprised to see the road pedals that you had on. And I was also surprised to see that, you know, even though you had aero bars, you didn't have shifters on the ends of the aero bars. Would you change either of those two things, or is there anything else you would change about your bike, or are you happy with it? Do you have it dialed?
Yes, I of course I'm happy with the bike, but I'm not really a fan of aero bars, and I think maybe next year they get banned for the pro riders, and because of the safety and the level gets higher and higher. But I have a special Villiers Vilante aero handlebars.
Yes.
So they had to custom make the mounts to mount aero extensions.
Uh-huh.
So that process took 3 months to develop and produce them for Villiers. So that's why I was riding with aero bars. But in the race, I didn't use them that much, only when I had to chase back.
Yes.
After that muddy section, what I thought, and sometimes in the group. But I think next year, no aero bars anymore for me. And
What about pedals? Will you still ride road pedals, or do you think mountain bike pedals are the way to go?
No, I will still ride road pedals because I think I have better power resistance.
Yeah, transfer, power transfer. Yeah.
Transfer, power transfer.
Yes.
And when it's dry, you have no disadvantage of road pedals. So,
Okay.
And now I have Ultegra group set, so maybe change it to Durais and...
And go even faster.
Go even faster with some upgrades and like ceramic speed or something.
Yes.
It looks cool to me, but
Well, you obviously seem to do just fine with Ultegra. So just, I've often told people that the only difference between Ultegra and Durais, you can't tell it with your eyes or your body, only with your credit card and a scale and a weight and a weight scale. But you know, the function is the same.
Yeah. So this was perfect and. That was a perfect bike setup for me.
Yeah. Tell me about your recovery. What do you do after you race and win a 200-mile gravel race? What did you do the days after? Just pack up your bike and jump on an airplane, or how do you recover?
On Sunday or Saturday evening after the race, we had a barbecue, so a little party till 12 o'clock, so not too late. But we woke up early because of you sit in the rhythm of the race, because the days before the race we always stand up at 4 o'clock, like race day,
just to get yourself in the rhythm.
So Sunday we were early, so it was a short night, and then you had the podium awards at 8 o'clock, so that that was a nice moment, but also a little bit sleepy. Then that day, you feel your legs are hurting, and you're not so productive. But we had to pack our bikes, and I had also another podcast with Lawrence Tendam from Live Slow Ride Fast, so that was also nice to do. And in the afternoon we packed our bikes just easy, and we went for dinner with our Airbnb host, who was again our support crew guide.
So yes.
He's a very nice guy, and next year we will certainly come back to his place.
Going back with Brad. Yeah, he's got it dialed now.
Yeah, with Brad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now he's famous now in Emporia.
Yeah.
And he's very proud of us.
Yeah, as he should be. Fastest pit crew in Emporia. So now you're back at it. You're back at work. We're speaking to you today from your friend Jasper Okalun's sock office. You're selling the Jasper's Sokolun socks. What's next for you this year? Do you have any more events on your calendar, or is it looking towards next year already?
No, I have in June and July are not many gravel races, but I will do some road races. Also criteriums, so that are not so long road races, 2 hours, yeah. 2 hours of racing. And then in August, there are some UCI gravel series, like Gravel Grit and Grind in Sweden. In Hoevelise, you have one in Belgium,
yes.
Italy, and the Netherlands. So that are four gravel races. And we want to go one more time to the US this year. And maybe that's in August for Leadville and Steamboat.
Yes.
Or in October for Big Sugar Gravel and Belgian Waffle Ride in Kansas. That's in the end of October.
Yes, those are all great ones.
And, and about the World Championship Gravel, there's still a lot uncertain. It's not sure if it will be held this year.
Yes.
But if it's going, if there will be a World Championship, that's also a big goal. For sure.
Yeah, and if World Championships happens, I think that will be cool, and you've obviously got a great shot. But honestly, I feel like right now, Unbound Gravel is effectively the World Championships of Gravel. It's the biggest, it's the biggest gravel race in the world, and you won it in dominating fashion. So congratulations once again, Ivar Slik, champion of the Unbound Gravel 200. Thanks for taking the time to speak to us, and wish you all the best
in the
future.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you.
We're here in Emporia, Kansas with the Unbound Gravel XL winner, Cynthia Frazier. Day after, how are you feeling after your odyssey across the plains yesterday?
I'm actually feeling really good. The walking down the stairs is a little bit tough, but I feel pretty good. I've done some big rides leading up to this, and I think my body's learning how to recover. This is my second year of doing these longer distance things, and I think I'm starting to get into the groove of them.
So for those of you who aren't familiar, the XL is a 350-mile nonstop gravel race. So the contestants start at 3 in the afternoon under the hot sun and head out into who knows what conditions, and the entire thing is self-supported, unlike the other events that run from 25 miles up through 200 miles, where there are checkpoints where crews can assist you and neutral spots where water can be taken on. In the XL, you are all on your own. You can stop at gas stations or maybe knock on the door of a farmhouse, but you are self-supported. So how do you prepare for an event like this?
Yeah, that's a great question. So when you practice like anything, you learn what you need, and I've got enough space on my bike with bags to carry 2 liters of water in a frame bag. It's an Apodura bag, and then I have 3 bottles on my bike. So I went with no Camelback, but I still had enough space to carry almost 10 hours of food, probably more. But every time you stop at the gas stations or C-stores, as they're called here, you just are making sure you're getting enough food so you'll never run out. I have some emergency food, like little peanut butter packets, but you're just always taking note of what you have and making sure that you'll never get to a point where you will run out, because if you do, then obviously you can't finish the bike race.
Things that you can't run out of, or you don't want to run out of: hydration, food, electricity, because it's dark, it turns out, at night, and you're in the middle of nowhere, and then energy, which is, I would be nervous about all of those things. Yeah. How do you, you've done the XL once before. Mm-hmm. In leading up to this, did you train by riding overnight, or do you just show up and go for it? What's the psychological or physiological preparation for that?
I when I was training last year for it, I tried to look up some information online about like what to do, and I really couldn't find very much. But one of the things I did find was they suggested you practice riding through the night. So last year and this year, I actually I did a route that leaves from a part of the state in Virginia and goes south. It's 250 miles and it's overnight. You could sleep if you wanted, but I went all the way through. And it was really good practice for me just to be able to know where my, you know, electricity plugs in and all the things. So I have a dynamo hub in my Hunt wheels, and then I connected to a sine wave beacon light, and that way I always have light and I always have charge. I also carry a spare light that I put on the helmet if needed, but I don't think I need as much light as most people. I never actually use a spare light, but you never know. If something happens, the connection goes dead, it's always important to have a backup. So just in case, I have a spare taillight and a spare helmet light for the ride.
It's just Murphy's Law. If you've got it, hopefully you won't need it. If you don't have a backup, yeah, there's not much of a plan B in the farm roads of Kansas. A number of people do gravel events to complete them. Like Celine Yeager's got a phrase that I've stolen. There's competers at the front, and then there's completers. You came in this to win. How does that change your motivation throughout the night? Is the competitive fire going the entire time, or is that more just like in the back of your mind as you're just in the moment riding through the night?
Well, typically I make multiple goals, like sort of contingency goals, if you could say, because you never know, so much can happen in such a long race. In this one, I actually thought I was going to get second. You know, I was maybe 80 miles in, and I never saw Scotty, who was ahead of me. But it's an ultra race, and anything can happen. So we ended up catching her after she had a flat. And then, you know, at that point, we were together for a really long time. And it was only until she got dropped from our main group, like 2:40 in, that I knew that I was in the lead, and that she couldn't hang on to the group that we were with. So at that point, unless she got a second win, I knew that I was gonna win. So that's when I really had it in my mind. But until that point, I was really careful not to, because you don't want to think you're gonna win and then get caught and then get second. That is the worst feeling ever. So it wasn't until I had 110 miles left that I was like, wow, I think I'm gonna win this. And I rode as hard as I possibly could to get to the finish so that I could make it there first.
That's crazy hearing you talk about just 110 miles at the end being like, oh, just like the last little portion, which is longer than most bicycle rides that most people have done ever in their life. So congratulations again on that.
Yeah.
One more two-part question.
Yeah.
The event comprised all sorts of things: terrain, weather conditions, people, crowded, solo. A cheesy question, but I'm interested. What was the best part for you, and what was the worst part for you?
The best part was the group of people that I rode with. That's my favorite thing about bikes, is the people. I wouldn't probably, although I ride many, many, many solo hours by myself in racing or at home, I just love the relationships that you build. And somebody from the 100 came up on us and knew one of the people in my group. We had maybe 75 miles left, and he was chatting with us, and he said, oh, is this your family? Like, he knew we were in the XL, and we were like, yeah, this is our family. Like, we had been riding together for like 8 hours at that point, and it really does feel like family. So the people and like the relationships you build is what I love the most. The worst part was probably, I don't hate rain. I do like it, but it was chilly, and I didn't bring anything extra warm. I just had a jersey and shorts because I didn't really have that much space.
You didn't have a jacket.
I did not. I'm like a hot person, so usually if it's like 55 or above, I'm okay. But I was a little cold at the end. So the rain, it was twofold: cold, and then stuff was getting in my shoes, and my feet are actually at. My feet are the thing that hurt the most right now, because there was like sand, and you know when you're putting your foot down, if there's something underneath your foot, it really is irritating. So 50 miles of that, I had to immediately take my shoes off at the finish. That was the second thing I did after drinking champagne.
Well, nice work, congratulations again. Cynthia Fraser of the Velocio Exploro group, and winner of the Unbound Gravel XL 2022. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate it.
Continuing our discussion with athletes who have done Unbound Gravel in its many capacities, we are here now with Lucas Luhr, the sports scientist and Unbound Gravel 200 first timer, to talk about his preparation before as a very methodical scientist person, and then what his experience was during the race. So, Lucas, your first thoughts, how was Unbound Gravel 200 for you?
Hey, thank you. Nice to meet you. Nice to be here. I'm very glad to finish the race, first of all. My preparation was a little bit like, can we say, I had less time for training, so I didn't have the long rides or something. My training was a little bit shorter, but also that's the reason why I don't know if some guys are know, but like 40-20, 40 seconds high intensity, 20 seconds low intensity intervals, why this is good for gravel racing or gravel, long gravel stuff, I think we can talk about a completely podcast episode, but it works very well, I think. And in the preparation, I had quite good legs, and then came to the race and everything blown up.
Yeah, welcome to gravel. That's often how it goes. And yeah, sometimes it's a test of equipment, sometimes it's a test of patience, sometimes it's a test of wills, sometimes it's a test of all of those things at once. What surprised you coming here for the first time? You've studied the race, you're aware of it, what was your impression of the events and what the challenges were going to be beforehand, and then what was the big surprise, or a big surprise, or some big surprises once you were in it?
Yeah, the big surprise was that there are so many surprises. First of all, I love the spirit of gravel racing. It was my first time doing some gravel race stuff, and especially here in Emporia, it's quite nice community, really open for everyone. That was really, really cool. Never experienced so friendly community like this. And in the race, I'm a former road racer, so first I'm more into positioning stuff, doing how to corner something, doing in the slipstream. And the first 2 hours was quite good. It was, I think, the fast gravel road, the first 30 miles or something. We had, I don't know, like 38k per hour in average. So I was always positioning in the first top 10. There are some hills on the race where the completely field split into pieces. And I was in the front group of 30 riders or something. There were Lachlan Morton, Alex Howes, Peter Stettina, Ian Boswell, all the good guys. And I was like, oh, I'm here. Cool. Let's stay the whole day. And then, like I said, the completely... yeah, surprising part begins. So first of all, I lost my saddlebag, I lost a tube, I lost a multi-tool, so no option for anything. Then I have stopped to fix some cable stuff and so on, put it in my jersey, and then I want to join the group again, but it was the worst time to stop from the peloton, because these guys thought, okay, now we race again. Yes. And I was like, shit, I have to keep the pace. And I really get it in half an hour or some stuff, riding 300 something watts to get into front group. And there was Zep again and was like, hey, I'm the front group. Yeah, you're the front group. Cool. Uh-huh. 500 meters later, I had a flat tire.
Oh, no.
I jumped into a very sharp rock. Not blame the tire. He couldn't do anything. Then I fixed the tire. But I can't. First time with the salami stuff. The bacon.
Bacon. The tire plugs. Yeah, it just looks like a little strip of bacon, and you use like a tiny little fork to push it
there. With a Dyna plug and rammed it into the tire.
So this was the first time you had used a plug.
First time to use the plug, and I was like, oh, I don't know how to do it. Just ram it into the tire, and was like, get the air a little bit into it, but not completely. And just pumped with a CO2. I had, I don't know, maybe 2 bar or something. And I lost again the whole air in the tire. And it was so exhausting to ride with, I don't know, one bar or 0.5 bar. I don't know how much PSI it is. But very, very less tire. And was like jumping on the rim all the time. And was completely exhausting myself just to keep the pace of the other guys till the first feed zone.
Yeah, because you would want to have more air in your tire, but that would require stopping and losing the group, and just doing the calculations of which is worse.
And, I was thinking, I don't know, 30 miles, I was thinking, do I stop to put some air in the tire, just let it go, I don't know. And there was one point I said, okay, you have to stop, you put some air into it. I put some air into it, I don't know, 2 bars again. Then I wrote it like, oh yeah, you have to do it very earlier because it, now it's very, very good. But after that, it lost again the air and was like, I don't know, just 10 minutes or something. And then I'm rolling on my rim again and then completely tried to hold the group, but it didn't work. And after the first feed zone, I had to the possibility to check to repair it again. And then it was very, very much better than before.
Yes, I mean, for those of you who aren't familiar with the Flint Hills of Kansas, which is where we are, flint is a very sharp type of rock that Native Americans use for arrowheads because it is so sharp. And yeah, like you, I had never used a plug on tires. I've been, you know, riding bikes on and off road for 20 years. I never used a plug until I came to Kansas, my first time doing this race years ago. And it seems like such a strange thing. And it's incredible how many mechanicals you see during the course of the race. There'll be like dips down into little gullies and there's water across the trail, and you know, you can't see what you're hitting. And almost every gully on the other side, there would be, you know, people by the side of the road. You know, I've seen like some tires that have, you know, 10 and 12 plugs in them. They look like a Muppet with all sorts of hair coming out of it. Yeah, it's just part of the experience, and it's unique to this area. Tell us about aerodynamics and gravel and what you were thinking about that beforehand versus you know, what your experience was. Aero bars are a hot topic, of course, in gravel racing, and when you're by yourself, that can be a huge advantage when you're doing 20, 30, where you're trying to chase back on or where you're off the front. Tell us what you chose to use and why, and if you do this again, would you do the same thing or something different?
I would definitely recommend aero bars for especially the long straight gravel roads. So maybe not all of the roads yesterday, but the long and fast gravel roads, when the gravel is very hard and you are really fast. I was training the day before on the first two long straights. Was like two straights of 15 kilometers or something, and I was like doing alone on my bike in my aero position. I was testing a little bit and was just cruising, I don't know, 200 watts or something, and just hold 35 km per hour. I don't know, can you translate it in miles? I don't know. Okay, great. I was like 35 km per hour just by 200 watts or something, 210 watts, and there was a small descent I had in my position, just not turning the pedals, just roll. I had 64 something K per hour, so the aerodynamic is so much important. And when you're in the peloton in the field, doesn't matter that much, because you can stay in the slipstream, you can be upright, you can breathe a little bit easier. But if you're in the front, and especially when you're alone like me yesterday, completely race, I don't know, half of a race, I had some groups of 5-6 riders. We turned some pulls, and then if I was in the front, I was doing 260 watts or something, just getting my position on the fast straight road, doing 38, 39, 40 kilometers per hour, and everyone behind me was very, had some difficulties because they said, hey, riding behind you is like riding in the wind. I don't feel any slipstream. I have to say I'm a little bit aggressive on my position, like doing really, like it seems like a time trial bike. And I talked with them, next year we come with a TT bar. We said that we can't have a TT bar because we don't need the drop bars, just the TT bar, and that's it. And everyone, every time you had the chance, get into the position because you save so much watts, especially on gravel. We tested on the track at home in Germany. You can really save up to 30, 40 watts when you're cruising around 40 km per hour just to stay in your position.
Yeah, sure. The science of aerodynamics, physics is a real thing. It's a measurable thing. But testing on a track and riding in the rain and mud on gravel roads are two different things. I'm surprised to hear you say that you would want to use a time trial base bar, just because there's some descents. Were you in the drops at all, or no?
Sometimes I was in the drops, in the descent, because to lift my center of gravity a little bit backwards. Yes. So on the rear wheel, but I think I can hold it in the TT bar as well. I was very often in my hoods, and then get back into the TT bar again. And also for aerodynamic reasons, like Sebastian, we tried some stuff like where you put your bags. You have to keep some storage in your bike for bacon or new tubes. And if you do like frame brake or something, you know, okay, it's like aerodynamic neutral. So it doesn't cost you anything, but it doesn't get you faster or something. So you can say, okay, if I want to put some storage, you can do a frame brake or something, and then you're going for the TT bar and then going into the extensions, and you do not lose anything. Jasper wrote some bottle cages behind the saddle. It's also like you're crushing the wind in the front, so it doesn't matter if it's on the back of the saddle. It's also aerodynamic neutral, maybe cost you 1 or 2 watts, doesn't matter, but you can store another 1 kilo of liquid, or 1.5 liter of liquid. And this is especially for pacing strategy or maybe losing some bottles or something, very important thing when you have, especially like yesterday, cruising 120 k's or I don't know 60-70 miles till the first feed zone will arrive. So you have to make some strategy around your race.
Yeah, often when we talk about strategy in bike racing, it's tactics. It's like sending guys up the road or attacking or counterattacking. With gravel, a lot of it's just like the logistical strategy of like, what's your plan A? Then what's your backup plan once that goes wrong? Yeah, absolutely. So there's a number of different distances at Unbound Gravel. There's 25 mile, 50, 100, 200, and the 350 mile craziness of the XL. Two questions for you to start. Final two questions. One, are you going to come back? And two, if you do, which distance would you like to do?
I will definitely try to come back. It was very, very cool race, and I hope for better weather. Better weather would mean for me. I like hot days, hot dry days, maybe 30 degrees Celsius, I don't care. But when the road are dry and you are very fast, that is what I like. That's why I think I would ride the 200 again. It's like a little bit more road racing stuff than the XL. The XL is just, but it is die slowly. keep your pace all the day and night. So who can ride the most watts without sleeping and do not fall off their bike? And the 200 is like you can really get deep, but if you stay in the group, you can relax a bit. So the tactical is a little bit more adaptive than the XL. Maybe going for the 100. I heard this is much more fun.
Twice as nice.
You can really go deep and then relax again. But I'm not happy with my race yesterday, so maybe I have to come back to get a revenge.
Absolutely, and that's how these races get you. You do it one time, you're like, well, I can change. If I change this, the training, the preparation, tweak the aerodynamics. And
Never ever again, but on the next day, you're like, okay, maybe I have to do something.
We'll look forward to seeing you here again next year. Lucas Lure, sports scientist with science.cc. Thanks very much, and we'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
All right, folks, that will do it for us this time. Again, I am Ben Delaney, and I thank you for joining us on this edition of the Pumped Podcast.